Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on here on a Thursday. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Glad you could be hanging with us as we get you ready for a big night. A lot of the college talents you root for are going to be on their way now into the National Football League. We'll see who winds up in good spots and who not so much. And then, of course, we're still keeping an eye on what's going on. All the SEC and ACC squads have wrapped up their spring, but there are spring games still this weekend for some Big 12, Big 10 teams. And, of course, you've got Washington as the ultimate outlier still 2 weeks from now with their spring game. But we're keeping an eye on everything going on with the portal again. It is a busy time for college football. We do it year-round here on the Chuck Oliver Show, as you know. Someone else who knows about that year-round college football life joins us right now. Jenna Bartle is the person who puts together every day the Until Saturday newsletter for The Athletic. She joins us now here on the Chuck Oliver Show on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Jenna, how are you?
Hey, Heath. I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. I appreciate you making some time for us today. Again, one of the things that makes it all work when we're talking about college football year-round is that you just never know. There's some stuff like spring practices. We know exactly where it's going to be. And then suddenly, randomly in Ponte Vedra on a Wednesday morning, suddenly Reggie Bush gets the 2005 Heisman Trophy back. There's just always something.
There sure is, yes. As you mentioned, our newsletter, we put it down to 2 days in the off season, and it's constantly filled up with just interesting news throughout the year.
And so now, again, you've got the draft, and that's kind of both college and pro to keep an eye on. Today, you've actually got some takes yourself on this. Again, you write and you also put together this whole thing. But I thought it was interesting looking at it. Obviously, we're based out of Atlanta. Talk about somebody you think could maybe fall a little bit in the draft, and you got your eye on Brock Bowers.
Yeah, you know, we were kind of going through looking at some of our NFL draft preview content, and I think Brock Bowers is a really interesting prospect to keep an eye on. He's obviously coming out of Georgia, one of the more talented tight ends we've probably seen at the position coming out of college in a while. But I also think there's the other side of that, where is it a good decision for a team to take him in the top 10? Somebody at The Athletic, Austin Mock, kind of detailed how that might be a tough sell financially for a team that might want to get a better return on investment in a player at a different position there and maybe taking Brock or a tight end down later in the draft. So I'm interested in Bowers and where he will go, aside from that sell in the top 10 as well. He's a little bit smaller and less explosive than people thought. I've seen in a few draft predictions, and I've seen a few scouts comment on his size. So I'm looking out for it. I know a lot of projections have him in the top 10, but I'm not sure exactly. I think he might fall a little below that. Obviously not too far, but I'm skeptical about the top 10 pick at this point.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about it after you said that, because if you look at it, most of the predictions for him have been to the Jets at 10. That, hey, that's where we think he'll go, with the rationale being they need to keep Aaron Rodgers happy, and since they can't give him Dr. Fauci, then this is the next best thing. And so we're going to see them draft Brock Bowers. But if one of those other top receivers is there, if an Odunze somehow is there, say, or a Neighbors is there, or a Harrison, which just seems unlikely, but one of those three might be there, then that would probably make him pretty happy too. And if the Jets aren't the one taking him, then all of a sudden you kind of look and say, hey, it isn't that hard to imagine how maybe he gets to, we'll say, the Colts if they're still there at 15 or something like that. It's not hard to put that together at all if he gets past the Jets at 10.
Exactly. I think That's exactly the point, is this wide receiver class we have in this draft is really, really elite too, especially those top three we're expecting to get picked in the draft. And picking a tight end at 10 is immediately assuming he's going to be an elite pass catcher, which I think Bowers has shown, but it's interesting how a team might evaluate his potential there against some of these wide receivers. Dane Brugler from The Athletic posted his final mock draft this morning and had Brock dropping down to 12th to the Denver Broncos. So it'll be interesting, and I think that's exactly the point. It's just how are we going to compare Bowers and his potential to these other really elite wide receivers in this class?
Jenna Bartle with us from The Athletic here on the Chuck Oliver Show, looking at a variety of stuff. You recently posted on your social media, we talked about the spring games earlier, you got a chance to check out one in person there at Oklahoma, and you're saying, hey, is this my first SEC experience? Technically speaking, the word is no, but at the same time, if you're an SEC team wanting to take a transfer player from Oklahoma or vice versa, the answer is yes. So I think the answer is yes, but more importantly, what'd you think of what you saw, particularly a kid like Jackson Arnold?
Yeah, no, it was funny. It was my first time there at OU, and I think around halftime they put up a graphic on the big board, and it said SEC launch party in the summer. I kind of took a picture of it. I thought it was funny, but yeah, the game was interesting. Jackson Arnold, I think after the game, he said he was feeling more comfortable. Obviously, he's in this starting role now at OU, so they'll be leaning on him a lot, especially since overall the quarterback room there is pretty young. So he's emerging into a leadership role there. He did well. He completed 10 of 20 passes. He 233 yards, 2 touchdowns. I think the biggest thing was there were no turnovers, which a lot of people were looking out for after his performance in the Alamo Bowl last season. So he was interesting to talk to afterwards. And I think the biggest storyline that came out of it was his connection with Deion Burks, the receiver who transferred from Purdue to Oklahoma this offseason. He had 5 receptions, 2 touchdowns, one from 64 yards, one for 50 yards. So he was kind of the big storyline. And we had talked to Jackson about the connection he had made with Deion in the offseason. And he just said that he's probably one of the fastest receivers he's ever thrown to. And they seem to have a really good connection. It's obviously the spring game. There's a lot of time and a lot of summer and fall camps to go through. But that seemed definitely like the biggest storyline coming out of the spring game was Arnold didn't turn it over. And it looked like he also had a good connection with Deion Burks, which was promising.
Yeah, Arnold is a guy, I mean, if you watch him at all, you can see immediately what the big deal is. Now, whether or not he can refine the details to be an elite-level player, that's always the challenge. That's where coaching and a lot of other things come in. But you can't watch him for even 5 plays and not see, okay, this could be the kind of guy who gives him another statue outside the stadium as a Heisman winner. It's just going to be fascinating to see how he adapts. I am really curious, I don't know if you feel this way or not, Oklahoma and Texas, because of what they did last year, they're coming in with people giving them every benefit of the doubt. Even though of the two programs, Oklahoma has been by far the more consistent program over the last 25 years. Everybody's giving Texas the benefit of the doubt that they might be one of the top 2 or 3 programs in the SEC when they come in. Even with Oklahoma only losing 2 regular season games last year, it feels like everybody in the SEC is kind of more, let's wait and see about you. I'm not saying you could be bad, but you got to prove to me that you're a double-digit win team when you show up. I'm not sold on you. It feels like that's the vibe, and it's just kind of interesting to me because their history says it should be the other way.
Yeah, that's a good point. It was interesting kind of parachuting into the OU spring game and catching up with what has been going on there this spring. I talked to a lot of reporters just generally how they just felt about the move to the SEC. And I think everyone thinks it's, you know, it's a positive move for the program in general. I think it'll be an interesting first season. Like I mentioned, I think the quarterback room is a little bit young, and there's questions on the offensive line that have been there throughout the spring. I think in the spring game, they were answered a little bit, and I think people feel a little bit more positive about OU's positioning there on the line. But I mean, this first season in the SEC will be really telling. And as you said, OU has a consistent history as well. So it's definitely not something to immediately turn away the potential that OU has in the SEC at all.
Last couple of minutes here with Jenna Bardal. Again, it is the Until Saturday newsletter. Jenna, for people who don't know, just tell them how this works, because I think there's some people maybe that listen that aren't familiar with the newsletter concept. So tell them how it works in case they want to get signed up.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So I write at The Athletic, we have a daily newsletter called Until Saturday. It focuses on all things college football. In the off season, we send 2 days a week. In the season, we'll send 5 days because there is just so much going on. And we'll kind of debate just the biggest topics. These past few weeks has been a ton of transfer portal content and what's going on there, the trends that we're seeing in the transfer portal, the players that are best available, and who you might want to follow throughout their journey and where they end up. I try to incorporate a lot of audience engagement too. A few weeks back, we ran best stadium in college football poll that Penn State had won. So if you want to vote in those as well, subscribing to the newsletter is a great way to do it.
Never thought Vandy would get second like that. Just out of nowhere, Commodores, just people love that stadium. So go back, read the newsletters, see if I'm lying or not. Last couple of minutes here again with Jana. Speaking of the transfer portal, I think we all were curious, given what has happened, given the idea that now there's no restrictions of any kind, you could transfer as many semesters as you're six in a row. Why not? Just keep transferring. Restrictions, no restrictions financially. I think we were all prepared for this to be a little crazier than it's been. Now, again, there's still another week or so for guys to get in, but I know you guys have been monitoring every last detail of it. It feels like it's been kind of normal, which isn't really what we were all looking for.
Yeah, this transfer portal window was hard to predict. I think the timing is awkward because there's a lot of spring games still happening when the portal opened. Teams still had spring games coming on. As you mentioned, when I joined, there's spring games this weekend and even past this weekend that make it difficult, I think, for some players, because maybe they're waiting for the spring game and waiting for meetings post-spring to kind of see where they land on their rosters. But this window has been interesting. I think the biggest thing that we've seen, and I wrote about it a few weeks ago, is just the amount of multi-time transfers we're seeing enter the portal now that there's not really restrictions on one-time transfers and players can transfer as many times as they want. So I think that's what I've been following the most. From Max Olson, our portal guru, I call him at The Athletic, he reported earlier this week, I think the amount was 25% of players in the portal were multi-time transfers, so that they were in the portal for at least their second time and going to a third school in their career. So that's an interesting storyline I've been following in this transfer portal window. But I would agree with you that it's unique because of where teams are at in their spring practice and in their spring schedule. And it was definitely not the ambush the first couple days that we saw in the winter window, for example. It's been a little tamer and a little bit more consistent, you know, throughout the days. We'll see a few entries here and there, but nothing earth-shattering, I would say.
And again, that's part of what makes a sport fun, is that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you can have something monster drop 24 hours from now, which is why we keep track of it all year round, both here at the Chuck Oliver Show and then again at The Athletic, and specifically at the Until Saturday newsletter that Jana puts together. Jana, thanks so much for making some time. Enjoy the draft tonight, and I'm sure we'll talk to you down the line.
Yeah, thanks, Heath. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Jenna Bardal does a nice job there with The Athletic with that product, the Until Saturday newsletter. Encourage you to check it out. Just a good summary of what's going on with the day. It is the Chuck Oliver Show, and we continue right after this as we take a look at what's going on with Andy Staples in the National Picture 15 minutes from now.
Of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Show continuing here on a Thursday. Heath in for Chuck today. He'll be back in tomorrow, but we're keeping you company right now. Of course, everything going on, whether it be the draft or the college scene, we're looking at both. Andy Staples will join us coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll talk to him a little bit about what's going on out in Boulder, among other things, where, again, there's a lot of people that are just kind of scratching their head and saying, is there a plan here? It can't be just swap out the entire team except for like 10 kids every year, right? So what is going on in Boulder? It is so fascinating looking at that saga, because if they had won the exact same number of games last year, but they had just not won the three in a row to start, everything about the way that that program is perceived would be so completely different. And yet they did win those three in a row. They did get ranked. They did have Fox show up for three straight weeks for pregame at their events and everything else. And so, you know, they got game day. They got all of it. And with all that attention and all that billing, well, where's it going? So we'll talk about that and more with Andy coming up in just a few minutes. One of the things that's always interesting to me about the draft is what you see for the guys who are labeled as sleepers, guys who are considered to be players that maybe are off the beaten path a little bit. And the more I've looked at the guys who are being billed as sleepers, the more I've concluded it is basically impossible for you to be at an SEC program and have played any meaningful amount of time and have anybody call you a sleeper. That doesn't mean that all the SEC players are going to go in the first two rounds. That's clearly not true. There'll be a lot of guys who go rounds 5, 6, 7. But for you to be a sleeper, you have to be considered maybe a little bit less known. And every SEC player at this point, there's just so much attention and so much exposure, it's pretty hard to do that. So like NFL.com, for example, has a whole thing here talking about the guys that they think could be sleepers. Now, you might think, okay, well, sleeper means you're from an obscure program then. A sleeper would be somebody who is a day three prospect from an FCS team or a Mountain West school, and not just a Mountain West school, but maybe, you know, a smaller Mountain West school that doesn't get a lot of attention. Maybe that's what a sleeper is. Nope. Literally, the number one player they list as a sleeper is Jackson Powers Johnson, who's the center out of Oregon, who might go in the first round, but they're saying basically he might go higher than you think in the first round. The number two guy, Troy Franklin, he's a wide receiver from Oregon. You know, that obscure program, Oregon. Braden Fisk, FSU, again, sleeper. Peyton Wilson, NC State. I like Wilson as a player a lot, by the way. He's 24 years old. I don't know what the NFL is going to do with him because he's had some injury issues. And he's 24, which is older than a typical prospect. But the guy plays like his hair's on fire, man. He is such a good player to have out there on the field on your team. Maybe there'll be some questions about how he fits an NFL scheme. We'll see. But he, if you're willing to take a chance on him, given the injuries, and again, no one's going to draft him first or second round because of the injuries, he feels very much to me like a guy that somebody's going to take mid-rounds. And if he just stays healthy, that people are going to say, how in the world did we let the Packers get this guy in the fourth round or something? He feels like that to me. But again, sleeper. Day three sleepers. Brandon Coleman, TCU, guard. Tanner Bartolini, Wisconsin, interior lineman. Jordan McGee, Temple, linebacker. Isaac Garendo, Louisville, running back. Other names to know. Guys from South Dakota State, Illinois, Rice, Boston College. Like, it is basically impossible to get anybody to consider you a sleeper, it appears, if you are from an SEC school. You heard Big Ten schools, multiple Big Ten schools in there. Pac-12 as of last year. You heard some schools like Temple that are more expected. You heard ACC. Nobody from the SEC is a sleeper. It's just the nature of this conference and the exposure it gets right now that teams have a pretty good idea what guys are. You're not going to have somebody very often that they say, well, this guy might be getting a little overlooked. It's just hard to do in the SEC. One guy that I mentioned earlier in the program has actually, if you want to call him a sleeper from last year, he is Xavier Leggett of South Carolina. This was one thing that I thought was kind of funny yesterday. Leggett did something you probably shouldn't do. He told reporters that he had been told by the Panthers that he was going to be picked with the 33rd pick in the draft. The Panthers do not have a first-round pick because of the Bryce Young trade, but they do have the first pick of the second round because they had the worst record in the league last year. And so Leggett said that he had been told by the Panthers, if that happens, if he's there at 33, that they would take him. Now, that might or might not be true, but he was asked about that yesterday. Not Leggett, the GM of the Panthers, was asked about that yesterday and said, quote, "Oh, yeah, I said that to him and 50 other guys." His version of things is that he asks them some question like, if we take you at 33, how will you handle it? And Leggett took it as him saying, you know, we're going to take you at 33. I actually believe the GM on this one. That doesn't mean, by the way, the Panthers won't take Xavier Leggett at 33 if he's there. I have no idea. He would make some sense for them. They need a receiver. That's about where he's projected to go. But I'll never forget. I don't want to say the guy's name because there's no reason to embarrass him. But there was a defensive back I covered at Florida. This is back in the 90s. And he told me, and he was completely sincere, that he believed he was going to be a first-round pick by the Chargers. Said that the Chargers really liked him, and he was confident they were going to take him, and not just take him first round. And you're in a situation where a guy's telling you this, you appreciate him telling you the information, but I knew what his 40 time was. And there's no way any general manager from any team in any era was going to take a defensive back with this guy's 40 time in the first round. It wasn't going to happen. And he literally didn't get drafted. But he believed it. He wasn't just saying it to say it. Like, he, something he had heard convinced him that he was going to be a high draft pick by the Chargers. These guys are under so much pressure and so much expectation and pressure and stress that if you hear something that sounds like something you want to hear, I think you just grab onto it like a life preserver. Okay, I'm going to go 33 to the Panthers. That's what's going to happen. Yeah, I'm a first-round pick by the Chargers. I mean, this guy that I was talking about from the Florida years, he never even played in the NFL. He's gone on to have a good career outside of football, but he never played in the NFL. He got to a camp a couple of times, never came close to making a roster because, again, he ran a pretty pedestrian 40 for NFL defensive backs. Good college players, nothing wrong with that. But I just always feel for these guys with the pressure they're under, imagining when they hear something they want to believe it's more than it is.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Chuck Oliver on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Glad you could be here hanging out with me on a Thursday. A lot going on for sure. And, of course, one of the guys who keeps track of everything that's going on everywhere, our buddy Andy Staples. Andy's with On3 Sports, and you can check out his show in the mornings and then replays later on YouTube if you're not a morning kind of person. Andy joins us now here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Andy, how you doing, man?
What's up, Heath? How we doing?
Appreciate you being on the Duncan Newsmaker line. I'm curious, you started at night, you moved to the mornings. Is that so you can get the workout in? Like, what's the plan with the morning strategy here?
Well, it's mostly like living a normal life. I got kids in middle school, and they got stuff I got to get them to in the afternoons, and better to do that than be prepping for a show. Plus, the way the metrics work, when you do your show in the morning, people tend to like to goof off at work. And so you've got your show up. They can watch it on demand. You're cutting separate YouTube clips that they can then watch while they're at lunch. So, it, you know, a little bit of math involved, too.
I knew there had to be a strategy. It's Andy Staples on three, and Andy hits a lot of different stuff. And the other thing I will say is you'll jump in. You'll basically do kind of a, call them an emergency pod if you want to, whenever there's something big breaking. It's not like you won't turn on the camera a different time of day. But again, I encourage you to check it out. One thing that has generated content for you, content for us, content for everybody, Andy, is the Colorado football program. This week in particular, I know you've had some back and forth with people online about this, but this week in particular is where I kind of said, hey, man, even as a fan of the program before Deion ever showed up, this is where I get off the bus. This Dylan Edwards thing is where I'm saying, okay, this just doesn't make any sense. Like, you have to build something with actual foundation at some point. You can't be planning to swap out 65, 70 dudes every year. I'm lost. Can you find a reason why I should think there is an actual plan here?
No. No, the Dylan Edwards thing is the first one of this cycle where that's somebody they had plans for in the fall. That's not a case where somebody's not going to play and they're cycling them out and they're going to replace them with somebody in the portal. Now, they were bringing in Dallin Hayden, who's at Ohio State, but that's not why – I don't think that's why Dylan Edwards left. I think he's got a chance to play for some teams that could be pretty good. He actually might wind up playing against Colorado because Nebraska's looking at him, but I would bet K-State is where he winds up, and Kansas State might win that league. So, like, that's the thing. It's interesting because I was watching Deion last year thinking, okay, if you can take what he's doing in the portal and then combine it with some really good recruiting out of high school, which Deion Sanders could do if he wanted to, because Deion Sanders could be the best recruiter in the history of the world if he wanted to. But he doesn't do all the things you have to do to be a good recruiter. And they're not building for anything. They're just cycling guys through. And that's going to get you the same results you had last year. Like, you're going to have the best player on the field in a lot of games. You're going to have the best quarterback on the field in a lot of games. But the guys around them are not probably going to be good enough to win you a bunch of games.
No, and look, if they hadn't won, if they had the exact same record with the exact same wins last year, but they don't win the first three in a row the way that they did and just have that wave of hysteria, then this whole thing is perceived so incredibly differently. It's great that you have a son who might very well be a high draft pick next year, quarterback, and a guy in Travis Hunter who certainly is expected to be a valuable player somewhere in the NFL. It's great that you've got a couple of those kind of guys, but you just, this isn't the NBA. You can't win with the big three, and I am just mystified. I mean, a kid like McCaskill, when they got him last year from Houston, it's like, okay, that seems like a nice pickup. Dana Holgorsen was certainly hacked off that he lost him. He redshirts. Okay, now this year you're going to have a couple of guys who've shown they can be effective backs in college, and now you're not going to have either guy, and you decided to change on Sean Lewis two-thirds of the way through the season as your offensive coordinator. I mean, you just cannot build anything this way, and I am mystified what he thinks he's doing.
Well, you're assuming he wants to build something.
I assumed he wanted to get a job after Colorado. No one's going to hire a guy who says, I don't do home visits.
Why are you assuming that, though?
I mean, if you want to lose, I guess you can.
Well, no, you're thinking about it all wrong, Heath. If you've ever been, had a kid in youth sports, you know the term daddy ball. Well, daddy ball is coach created a team for his kid who usually is the most talented player on the team. Now, in this particular case, Travis Hunter is the most talented player on the team, but we're counting Travis Hunter as one of Deion's kids in this case. So Travis Hunter, Shiloh, and Shador, he's created a team for them. Well, they're going to the NFL next year. So why does he need a team for them next year?
I mean, if it's just a two-year pump and dump and then he's moving on, he's not going to try and coach college anymore, I guess he can do it that way. I don't understand for his reputation why that would be the plan from the beginning, and there doesn't seem to be any other plan. So that may be what he's doing, but if it was to get another job after this, unless they are way better than I think they could possibly be this year, I don't see how anybody else would touch him after this unless he's changing his ways. And why would he do that?
I don't know if he said it was the plan from the beginning. I think the plan was put some guys around these dudes from the portal, get better, and then build on that. But I think they figured out, oh, crap, it is really hard to build in the line of scrimmage out of the portal, and it takes years to build on the line of scrimmage recruiting out of high school. And then you're just like, well, let's just make the best of this now.
Andy Staples with us again. Andy Staples on 3 is the daily show that you could check out. Andy, talking about trying to build through the portal, the thing that is, to me, fascinating right now is the defensive tackle land rush that's going on. I mean, anybody who is experienced and has anything to offer at defensive tackle, you're seeing figures getting thrown around $600,000 to $900,000 for, again, we're not talking, you know, John Henderson defensive tackle. We're just talking a competent college defensive tackle. It is wild to see the conversation that's out there right now about the limited number of bodies with experience and something to offer at that position.
Yeah, the thing is that SEC rule that keeps you from transferring from one SEC school to another and playing right away is really affecting that particular market, because the defensive tackle needy teams, the ones that really want to plug somebody in, are Texas, LSU, Oklahoma. And so that's creating a kind of weird market, because they can only take people from the Big Ten or the ACC or the I was going to say Pac-12, but I can't say Pac-12. But they can take people from the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC, the American Conference. And there's not that many people who want to leave. Plus, all of this NIL stuff works like the NFL salary scale now. So teams were already paying their defensive linemen among the highest of the people they're paying. So if you have a good defensive lineman, you're already paying him a bunch. He's probably not leaving. And so it means there's relatively few places to look for these guys. So, yeah, you take a guy who maybe was pretty average in the Big Ten, suddenly in this marketplace, they're the best thing going. And, like, when we saw Kristen Miller go in or talk about going in last night, now he's at Georgia, so he couldn't go to another SEC school. But it's like, oh, okay, what is this, USC, Miami, Florida State? What are we talking about? And then you see this morning he's back. He's staying in Georgia. So I just think the market's gotten a little more efficient in terms of making sure that you retain the D lineman you want. And then you've got this SEC rule, and you've got a bunch of SEC bidders who can't take SEC players. And yeah, if you were a half decent tackle at Michigan State, let's go. Go make some money.
It's really interesting, because the SEC is the only conference that has this restriction. And it just goes back to, they know each other well enough to know if they, yeah, it's making their life harder, but they also know if they could all poach from each other anytime they wanted, it would just make their life so hellish that it's better long term to not have to deal with it but one time a year.
Yeah. And the other thing is, everybody's like, well, if this gets challenged in court, they're going to have to give it up. I don't know if they would, because they can say, we're the only people with this rule. If you don't like the rule, go play somewhere else. Like, they might have the one situation in college sports where you wouldn't lose the lawsuit. And so, but you're right, Heath. It's exactly what it is they know each other so well. And they also know that there's a distinct group of players on SEC rosters who want to play in the SEC and only want to play in the SEC. Now, they might not care if they play for the particular team they play on, but they would like that SEC patch on their jersey when they're playing, because of what that usually means in the NFL draft. And so I think it's pretty smart, because you would see a ton of movement without that rule in the spring portal. And this tamps it down actually nationwide, because it keeps a lot of those SEC guys from even putting their names in the portal.
A couple of kids that made some portal news yesterday that I think are worth a quick mention. Again, Andy Staples with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Missouri landing Marcus Bryant. It's not a name that fans necessarily are going to react to, but the fact that this is a quality offensive lineman, an all-conference level offensive lineman at SMU, and that Missouri did what was necessary to make sure he lands with them, it's really, really clear. And I think a lot of us are kind of surprised by it. But Missouri is saying, we think we're a playoff team this year, and we're going to do whatever we need to do that we can do to make that happen.
Yeah, and they've done a good job with their NIL resources and figuring out how to handle that, to make sure they keep their best players, to make sure they're in on the best players in their state. Like, they got Luther Burden. He's now in year three as a receiver. Williams Nwaeri was the number one defensive line prospect in the country this year. They got him. He's a Missouri guy. They didn't get everybody. You know, they lost a couple guys that were in state. But they're keeping their share. And then they're also being good in the portal, figuring out, hey, here's what we can get. It's interesting you mentioned, you know, if you're a first team all American Athletic Conference offensive lineman, I almost think you should, if you have eligibility remaining, you should just put your name in the portal and see what happens. Because you're going to get a lot of offers. You're going to get a lot of money thrown at you. But, you know, that's it. Missouri's interesting because they do return quite a bit. Brady Cook's back at quarterback. But you look at what the defense lost, the two corners, the edge rusher, like it's not going to be as easy to just reload for Missouri as it is for Georgia or some of these others. So I do think they have pretty high expectations, but I think I would temper those a little bit because defensively they lost quite a bit.
Andy Staples with us a couple more minutes here. One other name, obviously, Jaden Rashada. As soon as the word came out that Georgia was probably where he was headed, I don't think anybody thought it would end any differently. But this morning, it's official. It is really an interesting move for him, for them. If you're Billy Napier, you probably won't in the same game see Jaden Rashada handed off to Trevor Etienne, but you can't rule it out. And, wow, that's just a weird vibe, I think, for Gainesville to have to at least consider the possibility of those two particular guys on the other sideline for that game this year.
Well, the difference is Florida had to give Jaden Rashada a four-year, $13.8 million contract that was not real, that was not backed by actual money, to get him to sign there, and Georgia is giving him $0 to come to Georgia. So the funniest tweet I saw in this whole process is there's at least a 70% chance that Kirby's doing this just to troll Florida. But I think realistically, it's a guy that they feel like has a big arm. There was a reason he was a big-time recruit. You get him for nothing, essentially, because there's no NIL money here for this one. And he sits in your room. He's actually played some. Remember, he had his start because Drew Pine got hurt last year at Arizona State. So he's played a little bit, and he can compete with Gunnar Stockton for the backup job. And then he tries to win the job when Carson Beck leaves. And if he doesn't, oh, well, he probably transfers somewhere else. But what did you lose from that? Nothing. They had the spot, so you may as well just use it.
Yeah, realistically, 2025, he's either starting quarterback for the Dogs or he's probably starting quarterback or contending for starting quarterback somewhere else. But, again, it just seems like for whatever reason, they're not sold on Gunnar Stockton. Not to say that Stockton can't play, but whatever they need to see to feel like he is locked in as that next quarterback, it's just been pretty clear they haven't seen
yet. And you want four. Like, you want four scholarship QBs. That's sort of the agreed-upon number for everybody. And that's – you just keep taking them and then hope they work out. Like, it's sort of like the NFL draft where you just – every once in a while take a flyer on a QB in the third or the fourth round, even if you've got a franchise guy, because you never know. But in college especially, when it's even more of a crapshoot, And even the top ranked guys don't always work out. Like, just keep taking quarterbacks and hope one works. Georgia's a great example of this. All of the quarterbacks they took, like Matthew Stafford was a number one ranked future NFL first overall pick. Aaron Murray was a highly recruited quarterback who won a ton of games for them. Who won the national title twice for them? A walk on. So you just keep taking quarterbacks until you find the right guy.
So the producer's going to come through and choke me if I go more than like 30 more seconds with you. But I just quickly, you did something fun, top 10 recruit highlight videos. And as soon as I saw you ask the question, I'm sure a huge segment of people, me, said, Noel Devine, because that highlight clip will live forever in people's memories if you follow college football at the time.
Well, Noel Devine for sure. But the real ones know it's Sam McGuffey. Sam McGuffey was not a big college football star. He had one good year at Michigan. Then he transferred to Rice. But go just type Sam McGuffey mixtape into Google. The third play, pick your drop off the floor, and say, thanks, Andy, for recommending that to me.
Yeah, he was quite the star at the time. There's no doubt about it. It's Andy Staples. You can check out Andy Staples on 3 live beginning at 8 in the morning. And again, you can check replays throughout the day. Easy to find, among other places, on Andy's social. Andy, appreciate you making time for us today here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Thanks, Heath.
There you go. There's a little bit of a lowdown on a variety of national things with Andy. I was originally going to hit some draft stuff, but we got going on Colorado. I cannot understand how a year in, knowing what you know, you're not holding on to anybody other than basically 3 guys and everybody else like, whatever. They could all walk. I got my 2 sons and Travis Hunter. That's going to be tricky to win a game that way against anybody that's got anything close to good talent in the Big 12. I think that's going to be a challenge. All right, we have got to put the wraps on this edition of the Chuck Oliver Show. Straight ahead.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Jay Toya went back to UCLA. That took one of the bigger names out of the market. And I think some of these big-time D-tackles are going to get somewhere between $600,000 and $900,000 for one good year. So, again, the price on D-tackles has really gone up because LSU needs 2. Texas thought it had Toya, from what I understand, and UCLA stepped up to keep him.
That is the voice of Bud Elliott of CBS Sports and the Cover 3 podcast talking about, we're saying, just D-tackles. Even a place like UCLA that has not typically been known for spending money, doing anything aggressive when it comes to NIL, when they knew they were going to probably lose a guy that could help at the defensive tackle spot, apparently they did what they had to do to hold on to a guy like that. It is just a different environment right now for that position. There just are not enough big dudes who can move to meet the needs of teams, especially the high-end teams, looking for big dudes who can move. And that has created a boom market for them. We will see in the upcoming year whether or not maybe more guys get into the portal from the SEC after the regular season, because that's the window. Maybe there's some guys who would have been interested who didn't realize, hey, you can't go SEC to SEC, or didn't realize, because I'm not sure a lot of people realize, that Texas and Oklahoma would be considered SEC already for purposes of the transfer rule, even though they're not technically in the conference until later this summer. Whatever the story, got more bodies needed than bodies available right now that are high-quality players at that defensive tackle spot. And again, is there anybody out there looking at this that wasn't planning on transferring at a school that says, wow, he said $600,000 to $900,000 for a year? Ooh. Maybe I'm not as committed to spending the rest of my career at Texas Tech or wherever as I thought I was. Maybe that still happens. Again, you've got another few days for guys to get into the portal. And remember, you only have to get into the portal. You don't have to get out of the portal. So if you're a defensive tackle, you could choose to put your name in, see what's out there. Your school probably won't be in a big hurry to move on from you because they're not going to be able to get anything close to a good replacement. If you're good enough that anybody that we're talking about here is interested in you, I mean, you could very easily, if you wanted to, get into the portal and then just kind of let the auction proceed for however long. I mean, it is an interesting saga for sure that's going to continue to play out over these next few weeks. That's what matters to me today. That is, of course, brought to you by the folks at thisstuffmatters.net. Make sure you check them out again. It's thisstuffmatters.net. One thing that was decided officially yesterday that I think is a good thing for everybody involved is the word coming down that we will not have any impact from the Army-Navy game on the college football playoff. With the fact that they have to play the games earlier because of the expanded playoff, there had been a push to say, hey, guys, could you move the game a week earlier, play it on the same week as the conference championship games, because then we'll be able to know who won the game, and there's always a chance that either Army or Navy could be the team that would be a representative from a Group of 5 conference, and we'd like to know. That game has its own special place. The chances that the Army-Navy outcome are really, that outcome is going to determine anything important in the college football playoff, pretty slim to begin with. the idea that you mess with that tradition of it being by itself and the attention that that gets for the game, mess with it just to try and be convenient for a playoff format that we don't even know if this is going to be the real deal for two more years. I didn't like the plan. I'm glad in the end they just said, you know what, we'll take our chances. And if somehow Army or Navy is 11-1, then we'll figure it out. But realistically, leave tradition alone. We've messed with tradition enough in this sport. That's one we can leave alone. Hey, big thanks to all of our guests today on the Duncan Newsmaker Line. Thanks to David Holloway for producing. Chuck's back tomorrow.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.